Wendy, this room just got so much smarter. I mean, it was smart to begin with, but now...
No thanks to us.
No. No thanks to us at all.
You know, this is one of my favorite segments. When we talk about science stuff with Lucianne Walkowitz, astrophysicist, Adler astronomer, artist, rocker... many things. And she has brought a guest, Dr. Shane Larson, a research associate professor at Northwestern University. He is also an Adler astronomer and a member of the, it's not LIGO.
It's LIGO.
The LIGO team that made the
but
discovery.
But there are LIGO LIGOs out there.
So. Are there LIGO
Seriously.
LIGOs?
Oh, yeah.
Now, this is an important moment in space history, Bill.
It is.
Einstein, it turns out he was right. And there are gravitational waves. I have no idea what I just said, so why don't we go to the experts and find out about this?
What does this mean? Please.
Well, I think, Shane, you should take a crack at observing this. That's funnier than
this,
you realize.
Right? That's right.
Because you did observe this, didn't you?
We did. So the thing I always tell people is everything you've seen, a picture in the paper or you know a magazine or a book about space, almost every one of them has been taken with light of some kind, whether it's light your eyes can see or light that we've built an instrument to see, like radio waves.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a new way of seeing the universe, looking not with light but with gravity itself. And it's something that we've kind of known should be possible for 100 years, and it took 40 years to convince us we could do it and 60 years to build an experiment that was capable of it.
We understand
60 years to build an experiment.
That's a long time. That's
well, it took 25 years to build the experiment, but it took us 60 years from the moment we thought we could to do it.
You're patient.
And this year is 100 years since the idea came to Einstein as a part of the general theory of relativity.
Yeah.
So, Shane, I've been using this comparison, and you can, since you're the expert, you can tell me whether this is apt or not. So in explaining this, I make this point that you just made about light being how we observe most things. So including our, you know, friends and family, light is bouncing back to my eyes from you all.
Right.
And sound, of course, is another kind of wave that people are familiar with, where sound waves will vibrate, you know, a medium, say, air, and travel to you. So I always use this idea of a drum where if you see
always with the rock and roll.
That's how she rolls, right?
Yeah. Drum rolls. So if you see a drum, it's because the light is bouncing off of you, off of the drum to you. If you hear the drum, it's because you're detecting the sound wave from the drum being struck. But gravitational waves are more akin to the actual vibrations, the ripples in the drum head itself. Because these are really ripples in the fabric of space-time, right?
Yeah. So the hard thing that is difficult to wrap your brain around is that we're talking about space-time. And what is space-time, right? Those are both words, space and time, that we use all the time. But as physicists, as astrophysicists, it means something very specific about the structure, the substrate that the universe is built on. And the fact that we can think about it and imagine it when we're not used to it in our everyday lives is, I think, a testament to the creativity of Einstein to start with and, you know, the difficulty that we've had for 100 years to try and figure out exactly what that means.
Was Albert Einstein the first person to throw that out there as a possibility? He was.
Yeah, he really was. He was trying to understand. So he had previously in 1905 taught us that nothing in the universe can travel faster than the speed of light, that there was an ultimate speed limit.
Yeah.
And once that was decided, you know, scientists and astronomers had done all kinds of experiments to convince themselves that was true.
Yeah.
But they started looking at all the laws of physics to try and understand how it actually worked its way into the way we perceive the universe. And he decided that gravity just didn't pay attention to that rule, which convinced him that gravity was wrong. And it took him a decade to figure out how to write down what we call general relativity, which Lucianne just mentioned. Where space-time came from.
When he would get something right, whose job was it to go, nice going, Einstein, because somebody did it, right? That phrase means something.
So famously, right? So when he wrote down general relativity, he proposed some experiments to do.
Yeah.
And the first such experiment was actually going out and watching a total eclipse of the sun, which we're going to experience here in Illinois in just a year or so, right?
Is that the Bonnie Tyler song?
Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Very close.
You can experience that anytime. There's a great video on YouTube if you've never seen the video for that song.
So in 1919, that was the first test, and it took until the 50s before the last test they proposed was actually completed. So
what does this mean to us now? It made headlines all over the place. Was this a couple weeks ago that this came out?
Just last week.
You know, gravitational waves.
We've known since September, right?
But. Yeah, this is an interesting astro-sociological point of view. Is never ever play poker with this man.
Oh, I bet.
Never. No gravitational wave physicists at the poker game. They have known since September.
And they didn't say anything until now.
How could you have kept this quiet?
No, no, we denied it.
You denied it.
So we said something. We just didn't say the truth.
Lies.
You should run for public office. You really should.
But okay, so gravitational waves detected, confirming Einstein's theory. Yeah. What does this mean to us?
The consumer.
Or just the general public that, this is you guys are geeking out over it, and I see it, and it's like, oh my God, this is huge. I don't know what I'm excited about.
Well, I compare it to as though we have an entirely new sense. Like, you're familiar with, sight and hearing and
right.
touch and taste. Imagine if you woke up tomorrow and you had an entirely new way of perceiving the world around you. It's that transformative for astronomy.
Really? Yeah.
And it allows us to study the dark universe, things like black holes that, typically we have to observe indirectly by their effect on things that make light.
That's right.
And now we get to actually trace their effects on space-time itself. So it's a way of directly observing that part of the universe that has eluded us for so long.
I can see why you're excited. Will we have space travel? Will we have, time-space continuum? Will we be able to time travel?
Well, so everyone asks that, right? Because this is all about space-time, right? But the truth is that what this teaches us is about that part of the universe that we have difficulty thinking about space-time as a unified fabric that the universe is built on. And while it's not going to teach us how to build a flux capacitor and have a time machine, right, what it will tell us is more about how space-time is constructed and put together. And so it will lead to a much deeper understanding of space and time and teach us about mysteries that we don't know the answers
to. That is really cool.
All right, you know how you said the first one is light. So that's an obvious one because we see practical applications of that constantly. And the sound waves, I guess, could translate to something like sonar, which kind of uses sound waves to bounce off. That's what sonar is. Mm-hmm. So is there an equivalent of that with the gravity waves? Is there something that's that concrete that those of us who aren't in the business can go, we can measure
so,
now?
So the kind of heuristic way, I think, to understand it is in terms of gravity itself, right? So you're sitting over there across the table from me, which our listeners can't tell, but let's say you are. Okay. And my two hands are each a black hole.
Yeah.
Okay? So over there, your head is filling the gravity from this black hole pulling on you in one direction and the gravity from this black hole pulling on you in another direction.
Right.
And if those black holes move...
My head will explode.
Orbiting around each
other. That would be cool.
We're trying not to
like
explode
scanners.
Your head in this experiment. So if the two move, this one's pulling on you more strongly, and this one's pulling on you. So the gravity you feel over there has changed.
Oh, it would, wouldn't
right?
it?
Right. But Einstein taught us it takes time. Nothing can get to you faster than the speed of light. And so that information is traveling to you at a speed at the speed of light.
All right.
That's analogous to what the gravitational wave is doing.
This is really cool. I'm sorry, I don't get it all, but I see how excited you guys are. And every time you come up, Lucianne, and so nice to meet you, Dr. Shane Larson, it just shows you what's out there and how much we have to learn. And it's pretty cool stuff out there.
It's a little bit crazy some days,
We have to take a quick break, and then we have some listeners who have some questions, and then Bill has a space story of his own, which came straight from his head.
Yeah.
That talk about gravitational pull.
Right. It did. I know. I'm going to have to buy another shirt.
312-981-7200. Why don't you go powder your nose and clean up your head?
I'll be fine.
312-981-7200. Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Is
there
life on?
There's the Bowie you requested, Lucianne. All the way from the Adler Planetarium, Lucianne Walkowitz and Dr. Shane Larson are here to help explain the mysteries of space and time, and you guys are doing a great job. And now callers want in on it, listeners want in on it, 312-981-7200.
And Tim is on the line. Hey, Tim. Are you are you confused about this, Tim?
My eighth grade son was writing a paper on this, and I didn't feel very intelligent trying to respond to the same questions that you're asking.
I know, and I feel really stupid. It's not the first time. It won't be the last. But you just ask questions so you find out more, right?
Exactly.
Did you have a specific question?
So if you read the announcements in the paper and congratulations on the find, all these scientists were sitting around and heard this sound. And so the sound had to be created by something. And the way I look at it, it was two black holes that collided. But it sounds like they collided 1.3 billion light years ago. Is that correct? And how do you measure that?
Yeah, so that's correct. So they were 1.3 billion light years away. So the gravitational wave signal has been propagating towards the Earth for 1.3 billion years. So at the moment the black holes collided, multicellular life had not developed on Earth yet. Right?
And you can judge.
Yep. It just hit me. This is my aha moment.
Here
Oprah,
it is.
Take that.
Here it is. And you could, it's easy to define that length of time because that's the last time the Cubs won the World Series. So all you need to
right.
do is
yeah.
look at that.
That's right. Yeah.
Tim, did that click for you? Does that make sense now? Because that just blows me away. We're just hearing about it now.
It's even more confusing because, as you said, there wasn't cellular life at the time. So how did the scientists, are they able to estimate that? It was 1.3 billion light years.
Yeah. So it's built into the gravitational wave data itself. Right, we know what the shape of the gravitational waves that we saw are. We know what the spacing of the waves are, and we know the overall size of the effect we measured on Earth. And when you combine those numbers together, we can work out all the properties that you hear us tell you about the source that created them, the mass of the black holes, whether or not they're spinning, how far away they are, and so on.
Hmm. And it's safe to say that one light year is one calendar year?
So a light year is a measure of distance, but it's right. The distance light travels in one calendar year.
So these gravitational waves travel to us across space at the speed of light.
Yeah.
So this is a difference between the way that Newton conceived of gravity and the way that Einstein did, which is in Newton's world, you know, probably everybody learns that Isaac Newton was sitting under a tree
right.
and an
sure.
apple fell on
him
and
on the
knocked
head.
Some sense into him. Well, Newton was able to describe like how things moved in space and worked out, you know, he was no dunce. He worked
before
out
before the apple hit him.
Right. Yeah. After he was never the same. You know, but in Newton's world, gravitational force was instantaneous.
Yeah.
And in Einstein's gravity, you actually have gravitational waves that propagate across the universe and travel at the speed of light. So indeed, this merging of these two black holes did happen a billion years ago, more than a billion years ago. But mm-hmm. it's taken that long for the signal to get to us. And, you know, Wendy, it's funny that you phrase it as like, oh, my God, it just hit me right now. Because technically it hit you back in September of last year. Because these gravitational waves, like that's the baddie thing, right, is that they are actually falling on the Earth all the time. And so at the same time mm-hmm. that this gravitational wave passed through the LIGO detectors, it also pass through you.
Sure.
That
you
is
didn't
wild.
Even know it.
Yeah. So really the benefit to the consumer, because gravitational waves both stretch space in one dimension and squeeze it in the other, is that they make you, you know, thinner or taller, whichever one you want.
Awesome. Hey, Tim, thank you for calling, and good luck with your eighth grade son.
What light year should we be writing on our checks right now, then? I'm confused about that. All right, here's the story that I want to ask you about, and maybe you're aware of it and maybe you aren't. According to this, and this was on... Well, several sources are reporting it.
Bill puts his glasses on right now to make himself
make
look
me
smarter.
Look more like
did
a scientist.
That?
Did that work?
It works great.
I have a lab coat I may put on toward the end of the story, too. And a beaker. Kevin, get me my beaker. They say that you can read it for yourself, but it says a monkey has been spotted sitting on top of the rocks on Mars. Now, I know. It sounds like something I've made up.
You are going to be the joke at the Adler Planetarium Astronomer dinner party tonight.
That'll
you
be
know?
3 years in a row then if that happens. As NASA explores Mars through the Curiosity rover, believers in extraterrestrial life continue to point out discoveries of their own. The latest comes from somebody named Scott C. Waring over at UFO Sightings Daily. In a post dated February the 6th, he writes, I found a monkey slumping as it sits on a stone alongside a hillside, and they have pictures of what looks like, you know, your common Martian space monkey just sitting sitting on a rock.
Aren't you embarrassed yet?
I was embarrassed when I walked in, not more or less embarrassed. But they don't have monkeys on Mars, do they, guys?
So your brain is very good at recognizing things you're familiar with, right?
Thank you, Shane. Yes. Yes.
Specifically
like
your
monkeys.
Brain.
He loves monkeys. He has wanted a helper monkey for years.
I enjoy monkeys, and space monkeys are the best of all monkeys.
Yeah, I mean, this is an amazing thing about the human mind, right, is that we are very, very geared towards pattern recognition. Yeah. That's true visually. It's also true of the information that we take in. If we have a particular theory or a way of thinking about the world, we tend to selectively pick information to remember that fits with that.
Sure.
And we do it without even realizing it. And so that's why you hear, you know, stuff about there's a face on Mars, there's a monkey on Mars, there's David Bowie on Mars, whatever happens on Mars this week.
Yeah.
Is really kind of an amazing trick of the human mind, because, you know, if you think about it, we developed to be able to recognize predators. Things that might have faces are, generally speaking,
sure.
other humans yeah. or like other mammals that might be threats to us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we evolved to have that, and so it, you know, holds over, and we see faces and things that we recognize in a lot of places that they yeah. aren't.
Like our brain kind of fills in the blanks for us.
Yeah.
Is that kind
yeah.
of what happens?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But if they found monkeys on Mars, that would be a much bigger story than hidden in the back
yeah,
of the internet.
Yeah, we wouldn't be talking about LIGO today. Right. If we right. life on
space
planet.
Monkey talk.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I guess what Bill is asking you is if and when you do find a monkey on Mars, would you please come here first to break the news?
Please.
Yeah, sure.
You promise? All right. That's all we ask.
Just like Bill came to us first, we'll come
right.
to him.
It's only fair, Shane. It's only fair. Thank you guys for being here. It's always fun to talk to you. It's Lucianne Walkowitz from the Adler Planetarium, and then also Dr. Shane Larson. We appreciate this. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Anytime. Come on down and ask us more questions.
Excellent.
And what's the website for the Adler?
Adlerplanetarium.org.
Perfecto mundo.
Yeah, as scientists say.
Is Fonzie on Mars?
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Fonzie on Mars.
We'll take a break. We'll do some news and then more show. It's us, Bill and Wendy, on WGN.